Well, after all of those late nights and overnight kickoffs in the World Cup, we're looking forward to the start of the new Premier League season, and we're raring to go. Well, a warm welcome along to the annual big kickoff preview when we mark your card for all that's going to be happening, of course, over the domestic season and a little bit of European action to look forward to as well. I'm Warren Ashurst and I'm delighted to say I've been joined by the Racing Post's football tipsters Mark Langdon and James Milton and professional punter Nick Goff, who's also joined us to look ahead to the new season. Well, it seems, guys, like only a week ago when we were watching Spain beat Argentina in the World Cup final. And now we're on the brink of another club campaign. Mark, we'll start with you first. Quick chat about, you know, any of the takeaways that you had potentially from the World Cup that we should be looking for.
I think really, you know, international football is so different from club football that I wouldn't be kind of looking for any trends. I definitely don't think there's a case of not enough football on either anymore. I think what would be interesting to see is whether referees are as lenient as they were in the World Cup. There was definite sort of push towards not blowing up for those kind of small fouls, if you like, in the middle of the pitch. You know, they were letting more go. So, you know, we'll have to see whether that sort of brings itself to the Premier League. There was also less pushing. I don't want to have a dig at Arsenal just yet. But there was less pushing at corners, less blocking of the goalkeepers. That seemed to be something that was outlawed more in the World Cup than the Premier League. And I did find I did find that sort of tedious, to be honest, for some of last season, you know, how long it was taking for a corner to be delivered. So, like, I would hope that those, you know, can be followed through into the Premier League and the domestic season. But apart from that, I just think the two, they're almost like separate sports, almost really, the way that clubs approach football and how you have to play international football.
James, World Cup fatigue, and I'm not just talking about you here, I'm on about the players. Is that a real thing to consider?
I think it has to be, doesn't it? When you look at, for example, Declan Rice at Arsenal, who, you know, I think Arsenal played 25 additional games in the domestic cup competitions and then reaching the Champions League final. You know, he was barely given a rest there, then straight into the World Cup, and we saw he was struggling. So yeah, I think definitely, looking at individual players' workloads, maybe over the last kind of 2 years or so is an interesting angle. And you know, obviously some big name absentees from England's World Cup squad. You're looking at Cole Palmer and Phil Foden and Morgan Gibbs-White. Are they going to make a flying start to the club campaign?
And Nick, it's been, I think, fair to say, a Premier League managerial merry-go-round during the summer. I mean, what sort of impact is that going to have on the season ahead?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest sort of narrative to discuss with the Premier League. I think it's 9 changes, which is the most in any given summer. And quite a few where you think there's a real gulf in quality between the outgoing guy and the new going guy, whether that's good or bad. And so that's going to be a really important part of assessing the Premier League this year.
OK, before we get into the Premier League in more detail, just to let you know that, of course, the big kickoff, which I'm pointing to the left-hand side to me to highlight the front page and cover of this year's edition, it is available now. You can buy it as a PDF or a standalone newspaper on the Racing Post shop website. Plenty to get your teeth into, as ever, with the big kickoff this season. Well, our sponsors, SBK, have a big welcome offer, a BKO special where you can get £60 in free bets when you bet £20 as a new customer. SBK also have BKO outright boosts on the guys' selections in our season preview show. We're going to crack on then straight away with the Premier League title battle this season. It is Arsenal, of course, the defending champions, and it seems fitting that we start with them. And James, we'll start with you then in terms of Arsenal. Defending champions have been fairly quiet in the transfer market. A couple of relatively high-profile additions, including Bruno Guimarães, by the looks of things. How do you assess Arsenal in terms of transfer moves so far?
I think kind of looking at last season, we were talking about Arsenal's squad strength at the start of last season. So I don't feel like they've needed to do a huge amount. Obviously, Victor Gyökeres wasn't quite the answer to Arsenal fans' prayers up front, but And it is interesting to see Bruno arrive in an area where Arsenal look really strong anyway, you know, as well as Declan Rice, you've got kind of Lewis Skelly and Marino and Zubimendi who can play central midfield. So I think Arsenal fans crying out for a little bit more flair. You know, obviously the corners and set pieces were a huge part of the triumph last season. But having said that, you know, there were excuses for that. You know, Saka, I think, started 25 league games. Odegaard, maybe 15. And Kai Havertz was out for most of the season as well. Those three really important creative players for Arsenal last season. So that may explain why it was a little bit attritional at times, shall we say.
Yeah, a lot was made, Mark, of Arsenal having to get over the line and helping that belief in the squad. As good as that is and as much of a boost as that will be for Mikel Arteta, it's always hard to follow it up, isn't it?
It is, but I would say, if we look at like the last 10 to 15 years, you were up against, you know, if you were Klopp, you were up against Guardiola. If you were Guardiola, you were up against Klopp. And, you know, those teams were pushing like all the time. And, you know, just before that, Manchester United had, you know, a couple of different rivals. I would say that if Arsenal stand still this year, I still think that will be enough, you know, for them to set a standard that maybe nobody else can reach. I think that Guimaraes is a very good signing. One of the reasons being that, you know, Declan Rice did play so many minutes, and I think that Arteta just didn't have anyone he could trust to kind of drive that midfield if he wasn't available. So now he's got that option of playing them together with a defensive player. He could play them together with an attacking player, or he could sort of not play one of them and rest them throughout the season. So I think he's kind of a signing that frees up other players as well. Like, they just set a good standard. And I do think the belief was the one thing, I know Nick tipped them last season, it was the one thing really that was putting me off. I went for Manchester City just because they had done it, and you know, I sort of just had that kind of question mark over Arsenal. They had their wobbles, but ultimately I think they deserve to win the league. And like, with the monkey off their back now, you just, like, there won't be that desperation. And you know, they can just go on, and I think that'll be enough for them to win the league.
Nick, for you, Arsenal the team to be shot at?
My starting place was, I wanted to try and find a reason to oppose Arsenal. Because, as Mark said about the desperation, that can go two ways. Even if you lose a little bit of your intensity, it can be hard for a team who've just won it for the first time, especially. Retaining it, it's a cliche, but retaining it can be harder than winning it in the first place. And with the set, you know, a lot of the goals coming from set pieces, football never stands still, and teams will work out how to defend that and have set pieces of their own in time. So the set piece edge may shrink. So I thought there might be reasons to take Arsenal on. But the more I've looked at every other team, there's a lot of question marks over everyone, and by far the fewest over Arsenal. So actually, I'm in a place where, as Mark said, if you play somewhere similar to last season's level, you should probably be shorter than they are. So yeah, I'm with Arsenal, yeah.
Well, Manchester City, of course, were the team that ran Arsenal the closest last season, but there has been big changes at the Etihad during the summer. Of course, Mark, we've seen Pep Guardiola move on. There was a lot of speculation over how long he might yet stay at City. He decided now was the time to go. I don't think it was a massive surprise to see Enzo Maresca come in, but it's a big position to kind of have to fill, having lost somebody like Guardiola.
Yeah, I mean, look, that is... There could be a bit of relief in the squad, because there's no doubt that Guardiola was intense, and there might have been players that didn't necessarily enjoy working under him at points. And I think when he left Bayern Munich, initially there was this freedom and people would start playing kind of slightly differently, and then it eventually didn't go to plan because of the structure he had in place and just how, you know, how good he is. So, Maresca, I don't know. I speak to some Chelsea fans who kind of thought he was very good. I spoke to others that felt like he was never quite sort of good enough for Chelsea, and now he's got the Man City job. I think he's working with exceptionally talented players in a lot of positions, but the Guardiola factor is just one that you can't just gloss over. And, you know, it's not like they're a much bigger price this season than they were at the start of last season, and like, they've got a they've got a bigger handicap to overcome.
They have, and James, you know, we're looking at Bernardo Silva no longer in the squad, and what a key player he's been over the last sort of 7 or 8 years. You've got Rodri looking likely to move on, and also injured anyway for the start of the season. It's not an easy task anyway, filling the shoes of Pep Guardiola, but without those key players, how is City going to manage?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, obviously Guardiola leaving, you know, feels like the end of an era, but also City have been kind of rebuilding to over the past 2 years anyway. You know, they had that shocking start to the season, didn't they, in 24-25, and started investing in January, and then as we saw in January this year, Mark Gahey and Semenyo came in and settled in really well. So I feel like, you know, the squad overhaul has been ongoing. Mm. And I do think, you know, there are obviously reservations over Maresca and how he follows Pep, but I do think he inherits a squad that, you know, this isn't like Sir Alex leaving Manchester United in the squad that he left. I mean, this is a proper squad who took the title race down to the last week and won both domestic cups last season. So, yeah, I expect them to be competitive, yeah.
Elliot Anderson comes in, Nick, and obviously spent a lot of money on him, and it's hard to move to a team with such big expectations like that anyway, but if he is going to have to replace the likes of Bernardo Silva and Rodri, it's an even more difficult task.
It is, and I don't think anyone can replace Rodri at Premier League level anyway. And I think with Anderson at Forest, probably you could argue he did his best work without the ball. Will City have it most of the time? Mm. So does that negate some of his strengths a little bit? There's a few little doubts about the transition from Pep to Maresca for me, and things that Pep did, such a genius, to be able to play Mateus Nunes at right back. He's clearly not a fullback, but the system that Pep played, everyone fit like a glove. Also, they've made some strange signings over time. Players like Reinders just wasn't any good last year. They've signed central midfielders over time who just haven't fit in. Lots of money on Nico Gonzalez, not really done anything. And you can go as far back as people like Calvin Phillips. So it feels like some things have gone wrong over City that Pep had papered over, and we might be about to see the lasting effect of that. On top of that, gut feel is that Haaland doesn't want to be there for a career. So how, one more year left of him? Is there any? If there's a drop off in Haaland, you've got big problems, obviously. Mm. It's a big task for Maresca.
I think Erling Haaland will crop up in our top goalscorer conversation a little bit later on, so we'll focus on that a little bit more there. Liverpool, of course, were the previous Premier League champions, and well, things have gone horribly wrong, really, at Anfield in the last 12 months because Arne Slot is no longer in the managerial hot seat. He's been replaced, of course, by Andoni Iraola from Bournemouth, and Mo Salah no longer, of course, in a red jersey as he has flown off to a new life in Turkey. And there's been a lot of upheaval in a short space of time at Anfield, Mark, which is unusual for a club like Liverpool.
Liverpool were the team that I struggled with most when we were preparing for this show, because you could make a case by someone. They were favourites last season. They've still got a fair number of kind of the tools, you know, in that are still there. You could argue that Iraola is actually better coached than Arne Slot. Could therefore, I think, start to build a case for them sort of being underrated in the outright markets. But there are just so many questions. Like Iraola, managing Bournemouth and Rayo Vallecano is one thing. Mm-hmm. Managing Liverpool, completely different. Albeit, I think he's more likely to be a Pochettino than a, say, Thomas Frank in that regard. But he needs to prove he can that football can be played on a Wednesday and then of a weekend, you know, with all the Champions League. They've lost so much experience and kind of leadership. And I used to question kind of the importance of that. And I think that's something I've maybe got wrong over time, just sort of like people that manage the dressing room. And so if you think about like Robertson, going, but even just from that sort of Slot team that won the league, you've lost Robertson, Konate, Alexander Arnold. There's like three quarters of the back four, even without Salah as well, and we don't know if there's a drop-off in Van Dijk, sort of even more to come. They've, like, the vacuum behind the scenes as well. Edwards has gone. Looks like Richard Hughes is set to follow him out the door. And so you just... I'd struggle to kind of be convinced that they'll finish in the top four. If Iraola gets it right, they could actually finish second, but like, I just think there are more I've got more nervousness about them than sort of the other teams up the top. And I did want to just ask Nick about European football and the impact you think, you know, from when you're sort of betting, like how much do you place on that kind of Wednesday, Saturday kind of?
Yeah, I make a slightly different adjustment. Is it away, Wednesday, Saturday? You know, that's the most brutal thing. But yeah, it has a significant effect on ratings and on prices. The market's well on top of it. And if Liverpool play away to Bournemouth 12:30 on a Saturday, compared to a free week, you might see 11-10 rather than 4-5. You can have, you know, it can have that big an effect, and rightly so. For me with Liverpool, I felt most important. What they were so good off the pitch, their recruitment was brilliant for the Klopp years, and they completely lost their way. What they did, they found players before they were elite. You know, Mo Salah, remember what he was like when they signed him, Mane, Firmino, even Andy Robertson came from a relegated Hull. And last summer, having won the league, they went and tried to buy ready-made replacements. They spent over 200 odd million on two strikers when they only start one. And so you're going to have a £100 million player, one or plus, on the bench at the expense of not going and finding the next centre-back. Now, Xhaka, they might, 12 months later, might be that. I don't know. But they lost their way, and they have to try and get back to being the Liverpool of old. Otherwise, what's your USP? There's no one in a boardroom at Liverpool saying we need to be a bit more like Man United or Chelsea. They've got to be more like old Liverpool. And that's hard, but that's what they've got to get back to.
Yeah, there's a bit of pressure on some of those signings that Nick mentioned, big money signings from last season, to deliver in their second season at Anfield. Is the lack of additions a worry for you, Milts, for Liverpool?
I think it has to be. I mean, you know, to follow on Nick's point there, you know, the big target this summer has been Bradley Barkley as well. He's, you know, not exactly an unexposed sort, is he? And you're going to be paying a huge amount of money for someone who, you know, is probably not playing in one of their problem positions. Whereas the defence, I think, is a concern. You know, Konate wasn't always completely convincing, but he's going to be a big absence. Xhaka's come from Ligue 1, is 21, I don't think has featured in pre-season. And just looking at the stats last season, I mean, Liverpool, I think only one top half club conceded more goals than Liverpool, and that was Iraola's Bournemouth. So, you know, that's a concerning trend. Yeah, I think Bournemouth under Iraola were fantastic to watch, and they had that long unbeaten run, but, you know, they had a lot of kind of wild draws in there, didn't they? And the emphasis at Liverpool is going to be on controlling games more, particularly at home. And I think there are going to be some real teething problems there. You know, I think when Slot came in, actually that first season, you know, it seemed pretty seamless from Klopp. Again, he'd left a squad with an excellent age profile, and Slot didn't have to tinker too much. But, you know, just one year down the line, it looks like a much more of a kind of jolt between Slot and Iraola.
Well, I'm sure you would have got a pretty decent price on Manchester United finishing above Liverpool on the table last season. That's what happened, of course. And that enabled Michael Carrick to be given the job on a permanent basis. We'll get Mark and James's thoughts on that in a moment. But I'm intrigued to know where you think United are, Nick, in terms of the prices at the moment.
For me, they're too short. I look at the new managers, Alonso and Iriola, going in, even De Zerbi at Tottenham, and I don't have Michael Carrick at that level. And until he proves it to me that he is on a tactical level with guys like that, then for me he isn't. I think they overachieved slightly last year, and I never had them, even though they finished above Liverpool, and I never had them as a better side. Bruno was very, very good, and if he does that again, then he will drag them along. And the signings in the summer for me are not the type of signings. Tielemans a good player, but he's a good player. You know, that if they want to move from being a top four challenger to a title challenger, you need title challenging footballers, and Santos, Tielemans just aren't that. Šeško still jury a little bit out. I don't think he's a title chasing striker either. There's not the coach, and there's not enough ability in the squad for me to move to the next level yet. And if you're not looking to move to the next level, you might be about to, especially with Champions League football, to regress a little bit. So I don't see Man United kicking on.
James, do you think it's a honeymoon over now for Michael Carrick? There are some people, obviously, who kind of look at it and think, you know, we've seen this story before and how it's ended, but others will say, well, they had no other option but to give him it, bearing in mind how they finished last season.
I think so, yeah. I mean, Yeah, I agree with Nick that I think United are too short in kind of, you know, top four prices, and I'm definitely against them in those kind of markets. I just feel, you know, you have to look at the big picture, and the bar was set so low by Ruben Amorim that, you know, any level of competence would suddenly be hailed as this resurgence. And yeah, Carrick got some great results. I mean, you know, those first two wins against City and Arsenal were, you know, really staggering efforts. But then after that, you know, they played a lot of kind of distracted or out of form teams, and yeah, they finished the season strongly, but without a great deal of pressure really. And yeah, I think this is a fresh start, and yeah, I expect United to struggle. You know, mentioning kind of, I think Tielemans is a pretty smart signing, but yeah, Santos, who, you know, was never a key figure for Chelsea last season, not convinced he's going to suddenly transform that midfield. Defence still looks pretty weak to me, and yeah, I'm struggling to see why, when they're back in the Champions League, they're so much shorter than sort of Chelsea, even Tottenham, for kind of top four, top six finishes.
I was going to make that point, Mark, actually, is that the extra games, that was going to be a test for Michael Carrick and his men.
It's completely different, you know, and there's at least 8 games. You've got to do really badly for it to not be 10, and then it's probably 12. So, yeah, that's like a third of a season that they'll be playing, and that's if they don't do great in that competition than, say, you know, Chelsea or Tottenham, and the squad doesn't look up to, say, the level of City or Arsenal that will be able to rotate in and out more comfortably and sort of more just assured of their kind of being in that competition. I think United will have to be at sort of full tilt most weeks in the Champions League. I felt like they had to give Carrick the job just because of how he did. But it was always the danger of appointing him in that place, in that if he did sort of well enough to win it full time, as Nick said, really, like, you know, would you swap him for any of those other kind of big managers? Like, you just wouldn't. And like, it's not to say he can't be a good manager, but I wouldn't have them in the top four at the moment.
OK, well, we've spent quite a lot of time on the title contenders. We could have spent all that time talking about one other of the teams that we're going to discuss now, and that is Chelsea, because there's been so much going on at Stamford Bridge during the close season. Xabi Alonso, of course, has been appointed as manager. They've been very active in the transfer market. And Nick, what have you made of what's been happening at Stamford Bridge?
Yeah, it's been interesting, isn't it? I think, first of all, the coach comes with a track record. He did a great job in Germany. Not quite so good in Spain, but that's, you know, an acid test. I can see why he was available. People thought that Liverpool could be a landing spot for him. They've gone down a different route. Not one I necessarily disagree with either. I think Areola might be the right fit for Liverpool. Maybe Alonso is for Chelsea. What he's done with bringing in these experienced heads, I can see the logic, Welbeck and Henderson. I do wonder what other players in the dressing room think about that and how it looks to them, because they're almost like sitting in a classroom being told they can't be trusted. And it's an interesting foot to get off on, to bring those guys in at the expense of players who, you know, starting 11 footballers, because they still need those. You know, they're not, for all the money they've spent, they are still clearly a few players away from challenging for a title. And so to have seen the first thing he wanted to do, really, is to change the culture. It's a little bit of a cliche and a little bit of a, you know, I don't know how much it's really. If it was as easy as bringing in two great guys in the dressing room, Wenger and Ferguson would have done it 25 years ago, wouldn't they? That can't be the change in results just like that. So, yeah, I find it very interesting. I do think they are set to improve, because there's a damn good team in there, and there's doubts about a lot of others. So I do see Alonso improving Chelsea much more quickly than perhaps some other new managers might improve their teams. And if Arsenal were to have a real drop-off, which I don't really see, but we have to say it's possible, if Arsenal did have a big drop-off, it might be Chelsea the best placed early on to capitalise on that.
Mark, we heard so many people say last season, you can't win when you just buy young players
and try to bring them away.
Exactly. Pretty much the same sort of thing with Chelsea. But to go completely the other way now is an interesting choice.
Yeah, I think they've misunderstood slightly what was required there, because you want more experienced players, but ones that are still going to impact the team. And you could argue that Welbeck gives them something that they haven't got up front. He's played very well for Brighton, and you know, he kind of, I know Gary Neville was pushing for him to go to Manchester United, and there was talk about him potentially being sort of, you know, England, the instead of Ivan Toney taking Welbeck. So I'm not saying I think that's a great signing. I think the one he wanted was Xhaka. He'd worked with him previously. Yep. That would have probably been the right mixture between somebody that can influence the team and the dressing room kind of at the same time. But like when you hear like Jude Bellingham speak about Jordan Henderson, like, it does make you wonder, like, if Henderson is just this, like, you know, he can't just be good at ping pong. He has to have other qualities. And like, I don't think that's going to make a big difference. I just think Chelsea massively underachieved, got their managerial appointment like all wrong. They've sorted that out. If Palmer stays fit, and we've not mentioned Morgan Rogers, I think they've overspent on him, but he's still somebody that probably improves them, you know, from where they were. I'm really intrigued by João Pedro. I wanted to put him up for the Golden Boot. I haven't, but I do feel like, because he's not on penalties, that's the reason. But I do feel like he might actually be of the level that you would require to potentially win a league. Nick was talking that he doesn't think Sesko's got that in him. I think João Pedro is a bit better than that. Maybe not the absolute elite, but he does. There are games when he looks like he could be a top forward. So, yeah, I've got Chelsea in the top four, but probably not challenging for the title.
One thing I would say, Miltz, is all of the signings that they made, you could make a case for them having an impact. But the main problem for Chelsea last season was defensively, and there hasn't been a great deal of additions at the back.
Yeah, I mean, they had a tough start, didn't they? When Levi Colwill was injured pretty much for the whole season. And that was a big blow. And yeah, they just seemed to kind of stockpile all these centre-backs and no one quite seemed to know which ones were any good and which ones weren't. And they all cost kind of 50 million. And so it would be interesting. I mean, you know, he's brought in a couple of players who are comfortable playing wing-back as well, which obviously he did at Bayer Leverkusen. So, you know, he's already building a squad which is going to offer him a bit of tactical versatility. And you know, as we've mentioned so many times already, and we'll continue to bang the drum, no European football gives him that extra time to work with the players. I'm quite positive about Chelsea. I think, I like the manager. I think last season as well, you know, Cole Palmer was injured for most of the autumn, never quite got back to his best, really. And João Pedro's a star, and Morgan Rogers should be very exciting as well. So, I see them as more solid top four contenders than United, maybe even the Liverpool.
I don't think this is going to take long, but we're going to go title picks, Mark.
Arsenal for me.
Milt?
I'm going for Arsenal almost by default. I mean, as Nick said, you look at the price and you're looking to take them on, but then you look at the rest of them and you can't quite do it.
Nick?
Yeah, under sufferance, Arsenal.
Seems like an echo in the studio at the moment. So Arsenal, understandably, you have to say, are the selections of our esteemed panel. We are going to look now at those European hopefuls in terms of the Premier League this season. And Mark, we'll start off with Tottenham because it's been an absolute whirlwind over the last 6 months. Roberto De Zerbi's already given himself a bit of a hero status with Spurs fans for what he did last season. And now already it's been a busy old summer.
Yeah, I mean, like last season got into a real panic towards the end. I went to the final game of the season against Everton. On the way home, bought a crate of beer and didn't get through the first can, fell asleep on the settee. I was just exhausted from the... You know, the excitement of something new and then the reality of like what that might mean. And so they would have gone down had De Zerbi not come in. I'm pretty sure of that. What he did in a short period of time. In terms of like, mate, I think it was a very short, you can't read everything into 7 or 8 games. Mm. But that's like, was it the best defensive XG or one of the best defensive XG in the league when he came in, which from where they were was some achievement. He didn't play De Zerbi ball by any stretch of the imagination. But now, Tonali and Fernandes, they have overspent, you could argue, for those players. I think, actually, Fernandes is very, very good. But you could argue they've overspent, but that's just like one Beyonce concert. Like, it doesn't really matter. They needed a fresh injection of quality. I think the defence, like you see Pedro Porro, Van Hecker, Van de Ven, Udogi, like that's strong. Like that's better than Manchester United for sure. And then you've got like Spence, Senesi, Danso, Robertson as the backups to that. So I'm expecting the team to push for the top four this season. Like in terms of swapping De Zerbi, in terms of quality of manager, like I know he's a bit of a loose cannon at times. Arteta has earned the right to call himself probably the best in the league, but outside of that, wouldn't swap him for anyone in the Premier League. It might not last the 5 years that he signed, but I think they're set for a better season. It's not going to be hard to be a better season, but you'd imagine they'd be live contenders for the Cups, and I think they've got a top four running in them as well.
Nick, where do you see Tottenham at the moment and how far can they get this season?
Yeah, intriguing. I think it's hard to... Yeah, we spent years saying Tottenham don't quite spend the fees on the players that the other top sides do to break into that bracket. So then to say they're slightly overpaid for a couple of genuine, really good players, you can't do both of those things. So I think they've put themselves in a position now. You know, they've come 17th 2 years running. Now, there are slight mitigating factors for the one 2 years ago when they were going for Europe. But real low base and this set of signings can propel them into a minimum of top six. You know, that's where they should be aiming. A top six finish would be a real progress. Can they push in? Probably be five places again in the Champions League. So can they do that? Well, they could. So interesting season ahead. And if it's another one where they finish mid-table, lower mid-table, there's real problems at Spurs. They should be really disappointed with that. De Zerbi will lose his job for that, I would have thought. So it's a big year for Spurs.
Comparing teams is often difficult to do, Miltz. But if you look at, say, Aston Villa and Tottenham, and Mark's already said there that he wouldn't really change De Zerbi or anybody. Maybe Unai Emre might come into that equation and the job that he's done at Villa.
Yeah, he's done a fantastic job, but you know it does feel like there's contrasting narratives around those two clubs this summer. You know, Tottenham, as we've mentioned, spending big, and just looking at De Zerbi, he's made fast starts in his last couple of jobs. First season at Brighton, they finished sixth, and then Marseille scored lots of goals and finished second to PSG in the league. So I can definitely understand the confidence with Tottenham. And then Villa, you know, I think Emery's done a really, really good job there. I mean, to finish fourth and win the Europa League last season was great, but obviously they've sold Tielemans, sold Rodgers, and it is difficult. I mean, I think they were flattered by results, weren't they, last season? They had that amazing winning
Don't
run.
Don't mention XG, Aston Villa.
Our resident XG expert, Simon Giles, was furious with how it was going for when they went on that winning run. So I do expect a drop-off there. And yeah, Spurs certainly heading in the other direction.
I did have Newcastle down on the list of the European hopefuls, Mark, but I have to say, at the moment, they're looking big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, they're more likely to be playing in the Anglo-Italian Cup if they bring that back. Like, it's been a shocking summer for them. They've lost the two real linchpins of that midfield. And then Anthony Gordon. You know, people question Anthony Gordon, but like Barcelona want him. So, that should give you a hint as to what his talent is. Like, they've signed a load of younger players. They've said themselves this is a complete reboot. You know, Eddie Howe left. Like, I'd be surprised if we were talking about them in terms of European football for this season ahead.
Looking at how unpredictable we think, Nick, it might be this season, is there a standout contender for you who might be a bit of a surprise top four, top six finisher?
I think there's more than one. Actually, I'll put three teams forward in this year. I just want to throw this out there, put it on record, that it's very unlikely that there'll ever be another Leicester, you know, 1,000 to 1, 2,000 to 1, whatever they were. All of the conditions that happened in that year, a lot of the big teams being 1 year or probably 12 months away from where they wanted to be, with all these managerial changes, we look at five or six teams, big teams in the Premier League now, and think maybe they're 1 year away from where they really want to be. Now, if Arsenal were to have a drop-off, suddenly you've got all the conditions that you had in the Leicester year.
Yep.
I'm not going to throw out 1,000 to 1 shot to win the Premier League, but I do want it on record that it's that someone... Look at like the to be top at Christmas market, some of the big prices in there, things like that. Someone could give it a real tilt. And there's three teams I want to throw out there. Brighton, whose recruitment is just brilliant. They've done effectively a swap deal with Spurs for the centre-back. The Croatian lad's a very good player. And they've signed a right-back, Costinha, I think he's called, who looks a good player. They're settled and ready to go again, might improve. The guy Sangare that Brentford signed, I think he's a miss for the top six. He's a £100 million player for next year. And what Keith Andrews did in his first season was really good. You know, good set piece side. They tick a load of boxes. They could go well. And Leeds, who I think are a really good side, are able to kick on. They've signed Harry Wilson from, you know, who brings goals from Fulham's midfield, and the Bosnian centre-back who got into a tangle with Balogun, which luckily Donald Trump noticed because none of the rest of us did. Those three clubs, I think, it's not impossible that top six, top four prices at a huge price. Someone could have a year out of nowhere, and those are the three teams that are stable on my list, because as you go a bit below them, we're going to be talking about clubs in relegation battles potentially who have had to swap managers. Those three are settled.
Okay, we will talk relegation very shortly, but I want to get the guys 1, 2, 3, 4 selections for the Premier League campaign. Mark, we'll start with you.
Yeah, Arsenal, City, Chelsea and Tottenham.
Milts?
Arsenal, City, Chelsea and Liverpool to pip Tottenham to fourth.
And finally, Nick?
Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City, Brentford.
Okay, controversial last selection from Nick Goff. Brentford, of course, were one of those who were favourites to be relegated last season, having lost Thomas Frank and brought in Keith Andrews. What a fantastic season they had last time around. I wonder who will be battling it out for the bottom three places come May this time. Mark, we'll start with you. Firstly, what about the chances of the promoted teams?
We sat here 12 months ago and said, because it was 2 years running, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, it's only 2 years and each team needs to be judged on its own merits. And that's exactly what I'm going to do now. And Hull could be one of the worst teams that's ever been promoted. That's not to say that they'll be one of the worst teams in the Premier League, because, you know, they are looking to do business, and but they haven't to the extent that Sunderland did, for example, last year. So like, I think Hull will be relegated. I mean, their XG, I know some people get brought out in a cold sweat with that, but it's like, you know, closer to relegation than it was being a Premier League team. Ipswich, I think, are the of the three that if I was going to back one to be relegated, it would be Ipswich. I thought they were out of their depth sort of the last time they were in the league. I don't see massive improvement. And then, you know, I mean, Nick will know sort of, you know, the Gary O'Neill, Kieran McKenna swap. I was a big McKenna fan, and I think he's turned down a couple, like, bigger jobs, which I think is the sign of a good manager, actually, that he kind of is waiting for the right spot for his next move. And he probably felt if he goes to it, he stays at Ipswich and gets relegated again, like, that's not going to look great for him. Coventry, like, would be the ones that I'd... You know, if one of them is to stay up, I think it's most likely to be Coventry. But I don't see them having... Like, they're not as good as what Leeds were when Leeds come up, in my opinion. They are looking to make signings as well, but they're coming quite late. If there was to be one that got dragged in it from kind of the established teams, I'd say possibly Fulham would be the ones. But I wouldn't be that surprised if all three went back down.
James, Mark's already touched upon it there with Hull. I have to say, I watched them several times last season. I genuinely think they were shocked that they were able to even get anywhere near going up. And they and Ipswich almost seem to be caught on the hop a little bit in terms of wondering how big they should go for it and how much money they should spend.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Certainly with Hull, you know, it was a big shock, really. I mean, that leads into my tip, actually, because Sunderland obviously went up as playoff winners and then spent money really shrewdly bolstering their squad. But I just think there is going to be a significant downturn this season. You know, amazing effort to finish seventh, but you just look at it and so many tight games went their way, so many late winners and you know, could easily have finished bottom half. And now they're in Europe and they've actually had a surprisingly quiet summer in the transfer window. I think brought in Thomas Meunier, who's 34-year-old on a free transfer. Granit Xhaka's a year older, as we all are, of course.
I was just about to point that out.
You know, reach the World Cup quarterfinals. You know, can he be a fixture in their midfield to the extent that he was last season? And yeah, I don't want to go down the XG route again, but you know, they just had so little creativity last season. And they scored 42 goals in the league, four fewer than West Ham, who went down. And I just think once those tight margins start going against them, coupled with the fatigue of European action, I think they could be in trouble.
Having seen all that you saw last season, Nick, with the likes of Wolves at the bottom end of the table, I mean, is there a case to be made for those three promoted teams, do you think?
There's a case to be made for one of Ipswich or Coventry getting on a... Because to expect one of the mid-table clubs to have a Wolves-type year is not as bad as that, but to get sucked in, especially when you've got the managerial changes, at clubs like Fulham, who Marco Silva did a great job, and especially at Palace, there's a two-pronged thing at Palace, because not only was Glasner a great coach, but they had Dougie Friedman doing the recruitment, and they signed brilliantly. Mm. And so they've lost both of those things. And so it's almost certain that Palace are going to have to regress to some extent because they can't replicate what was there before. Will it be enough to suck them into a relegation battle? Well, only if at least one of Ipswich or Coventry are better than we'd expect them to be. And it'll be very tough for them both. I think what Gary O'Neill does well, players like him, and he creates a us versus them mentality. And that may be enough for them to win, you know, to win enough games to stay involved, whether it's enough to get to 35, 38 points, I don't know. Coventry, very stable. They've kept together most of the squad, which won the league. Although they won it, they weren't head and shoulders the best team in the Championship. Lampard, Gary O'Neill won't get a move somewhere else, but if Lampard got off to a good start, he might be linked with other jobs. If done to head, which one more likely to stay up? Slightly Coventry, but you know, you've got to go and win a couple of away games. You know, you've got to stamp your mark on the league. Go and prove that you've got it. And teams like Leeds did that last year. Yeah. Leeds were an outstanding team in the Championship. I'm not sure last year the Championship was that strong and that any of those teams were actually outstanding. Hull obviously weren't.
Yeah.
But if two are going to get sucked in, Fulham and Palace are my obvious possibles.
Best bets then, Mark, in terms of the relegation battle?
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to be tying up loads of money on sort of odds-on shots, but I did think that Ipswich were fair enough, you know, for relegation. If you wanted a bigger price one, Fulham.
Bilts?
Yeah, Sunderland for me.
OK. And Nick, if you were going to have a relegation bet?
Split stakes, Fulham and Palace.
OK, well, that is the bottom end that we're predicting of the Premier League table. And we did promise you, of course, that we'd be looking at the top goal scorer market and the other best bets, of course, in the top flight this season as well. I don't think, Mark, we've probably ever had as short a favourite for the Golden Boot, have we?
No, I mean, Nick might know the answer to this. We were asking this question in the office, was it earlier this week? We were trying to find an example of kind of a Premier League, like I think Thierry Henry would have won a few in a row, but I don't think he got this short. You know, so I don't know, Nick. Do you remember?
No, I don't think they've been this short, and that's because of the dearth of strikers. Back in that era, even the mid-table clubs had potential 20-goal strikers. They don't really exist anymore. There aren't many of them around.
No, so like I think, you know, if Haaland stays fit, he'll probably win. Justify favouritism. I'll repeat what I said there really about Ipswich. Do you want to be tying in your money into like a 4-6 shot or whatever? Like it's not really my idea of kind of anti-post betting. I'm going to go for another Manchester City player because I think the only way Haaland doesn't win is if he gets injured, and he's just played a World Cup that he's never had to do before. You know, Norway, he carried a nation. He's got the broad shoulders, but he did carry them, you know, to the quarterfinals. If you remember before he came to City, there were question marks over his fitness. He seems to have, you know, been able to manage that much better now. If he got injured, then Semenyo is the one I was looking at to kind of... I mean, he was fantastic for Bournemouth. He was equally as good for Manchester City. Makes a difference all the time. And as Nick said there, it's not always about the strikers anymore. The wingers are kind of chipping in with the goals. Like, I don't think he can win if Haaland sort of stays fit, but I'm not sure any of them can win if Haaland stays fit. So I'll back a City player and not hope that Haaland gets injured. That feels a bit... It's always the same in the sack race. You know, punters were celebrating after bloke A lost his job. But, you know, if Haaland did get injured, then, you know, maybe it's another City player that steps up. I'd also chuck out Marmoush in that sort of, you know, for similar reasons.
Nick, would you see anybody outside of Haaland going close?
You might need Haaland to get an injury or something, but Igor Thiago came second last year. He got 8 penalties. He's a good penalty taker. Started a couple of games in the World Cup for Brazil. So this is a close to elite level striker for a team I think could challenge top 6, top 8 this year. He's a guaranteed starter. If he stays fit, he's probably in for 17, 18 goals, which you can't say about many people. So if you can bet each way, then obviously you need something to happen to Haaland for the win part. But I can't see many people in for as many goals as he is.
And Miltz, I suppose, you know, both Nick and Mark have mentioned it so far. Penalties can be absolutely crucial to this market.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my selection's João Pedro, who is a very good penalty taker, but unfortunately plays for the same team as Cole Palmer. But, you know, if Palmer's absent, then Pedro could get on a spot kick duty. And obviously he was overlooked by Brazil for the World Cup. So, you know, you'd expect him to be raring to go. He hit the ground running, didn't he, at the Club World Cup just after joining Chelsea. And then 20 goals in all competitions in his first season, 15 of them in the league, I think was a really, really promising effort, given the chaos behind the scenes at Stamford Bridge. So, yeah, I think, you know, Alonso will play a positive brand of football.
He scored an incredible goal. Do you remember they got beat by Forest B team and he scored
it? It's a bicycle kick.
Yeah.
He has brilliant
quality. He's a real talent.
I do remember seeing Troy Deeney talk about him, having played with him at Watford, and somebody said about the comparison between him and Richarlison. He said there is no comparison. He's way better. He's got far more ability. So João Pedro is certainly one to watch this season. We'll wrap up our Premier League look ahead now with the best bets from the guys for everything else in terms of the top flight. Mark, we'll start with you.
I'll go for David Raya, Golden Glove. Since he moved to Arsenal, he's won it on his own twice, and he shared it with Matt Seltz, I don't know how Forrest kept the clean sheets that they did. That was some wizardry in the XG department. So, you know, he's been top like 3 years running. I don't just think that clean sheet mentality, or just, you know, he's odds against for that, and I think that's fair enough. I quite like Bournemouth, bottom half finish. I've been a big sort of believer in Bournemouth, but like Iraola was a significant part of that. Like, I just don't know if you can keep losing players and replacing them. Senesi's gone from the back four, Kroupi's out for a significant period at the start. Like, they've probably found another three Kroupis and they'll be okay. But like, I think it's hard. And then just to follow up on what both the lads have said earlier about kind of Milks is anti-Sunderland and Nick likes Leeds. There's a couple of match bets around Leeds to finish above Sunderland, which I think is a very solid favourite one. And I'd also chuck Forest into that as well against Sunderland.
James, what's your standout Premier League bet?
Yeah, I like Forest top Midlands club. So they're in there, obviously, with Aston Villa and Coventry, who you'd be very shocked to see would win that heat. But, Villa are obviously favourites, but you know, I think it's a tough task for Emery, rebuilding the squad back in the Champions League and maintaining their league form. And you know, Forest, I think, were a better side than 16th place suggested. Finished the season strongly, you know, one defeat in 10. Oliver Glasner is manager for now.
Binface will be in by September.
I'm hopeful that you know, the revolving door will stop with him. I mean, did a fabulous job at Crystal Palace, as well as the trophies he won. They've got the club record Premier League points as well. So I think Forest, you know, obviously lost Anderson, but I expect them to reinvest before the end of the transfer window.
And Nick, I'm sure you'll have been scouring all markets Premier League related so far. What stood out for you?
I just want to get with those three teams I mentioned, Brighton, Brentford and Leeds, in as many markets as I can. Top four, top six, top half, the season handicap, maybe to win a cup each way, something like that. I want to go down with the ship with those three this year and hope at least one of them proves me right.
OK, well, that is the Premier League then done and dusted for our BKO preview. We're going to turn our attentions now to the EFL and, of course, start with the Championship, which, in some cases over the last few years, has been very hard to predict. But I think probably even more so, maybe, Mark, this year, when you consider the upheaval that the three teams that went down have gone through, maybe.
I think there's always upheaval when teams get relegated, and I feel like I repeat myself all the time here in that, like, I just want to see what they look like at the end of August, and we're only early August now. Like, you know, West Ham, I think, have the potential to kind of, you know, just win it as favourites. But like Cassianos, I'm not entirely sure he'll stay. The squad looks a bit thin at the moment. You know, they've lost Fernandez and Somerville and Disasi as well, who was, you know, a really important loan player. So my instinct is to kind of try and take them out of the equation and sort of bet in the sort of promotion markets. I'll let Nick, you know, he'll know Wolves kind of better than me. I know Miltz, he fancies Burnley to go well. That surprised me. That's to say, I think it's a rubbish tip, Miltz. But I, in terms of the upheaval, I was wondering if Burnley, not to do a Leicester necessarily, but like I wasn't sure that they had the sort of the quality of, say, a Southampton or even Middlesbrough that set a reasonable enough standard from kind of the teams that didn't go up last year. So let's wait and see, really, with them. But Nick, from a Wolves point of view?
There's of the three, there's the most business still to be done at Wolves. There's three goalkeepers that need clearing out, and so one new one required. Hopefully that's going to progress soon, because I think Olympiacos want Jose Sarr, and they just sold their keeper to Hull yesterday. So then the chain can start to move. And I understand why they don't want to bring in a fourth keeper while there's three on good wages on the books. Probably need another central midfielder, maybe another centre back. But if you look at the front three, if it's going to be Fer Lopez is a proper player, signed last year, but joined a team that never had the ball in the Premier League and didn't get to play, went back on loan to Celta Vigo, was their best player. They can't afford to buy him Celta Vigo at 20-odd million, so he's come back to Wolves. He's the best player on the pitch every pre-season game. If him and Mane are behind Raul Jimenez, you don't see much of that in the Championship. That three alone will fire them close, I would think. But we don't know anything about the new manager. He's come from unknown in Portugal. They do need a couple of new players before the window shuts. So at around 5-1, do I see Wolves as a bet right now? No, but if anyone's going to challenge West Ham, that's the nucleus that's going to get close. From a West Ham perspective, I wouldn't be shocked at all if they're a 100-point team, because it just could be that. But that place could become pretty vicious if they get off to a bad start. Yeah. And Nuno's the type of guy that would sulk and walk. So there is a way that turns out. You know, could all go wrong for West Ham, but I don't really see it. But again, do I want to back them at 13-8 or 7-4? I don't. From Burnley's perspective, Wolves had 2 points from 20 games at Christmas last year, just after Christmas, and my rating of Wolves was still higher than Burnley's, who were sort of 13 points clear of them. So Wolves underachieved a little bit relative to their performance, and Burnley, I think this team that Burnley come down with is the worst team, and they've obviously been relegated a few times, is the worst iteration of Burnley. And so for that reason alone, I decided that I wanted to be against them.
It's only fair, James, will give you the chance to defend the Clarets, I think, after that.
I'm going to say they're a tentative pick. And, I think, you know, it's certainly at the prices, you know, West Ham and Wolves certainly set a high standard. But it's, you know, I think Burnley's pedigree in the Championship counts for something. You know, their last four seasons, they finished in the top two, obviously been yo-yoing, you know, 100 points in the last two times they've been in the Championship. I think there are, you know, like we mentioned with so many of the Premier League teams, there are a lot of doubts and there's a lot of business to be done before the end of the transfer window. The new manager, Nicky Hayen, got Club Brugge to the Champions League knockout stages. Mm. You know, there's obviously an interesting appointment there. I'm willing to have a couple of quid on them to
I did watch their pre-season game away at Ajax. I don't know why. I mean, I was waiting for the wife to get ready and I was just sort of watching it. And like the football they play is quite good. So like I think it'll be a kind of different Burnley to this kind of growly Burnley that we kind of maybe expected under Parker and Dyche previously. But it wouldn't be for me.
Well, all the three teams that are relegated normally up near the top of the betting odds to go straight back up. Nick, if you're looking at the teams who were in the Championship last season who could be battling again, who's your best bet from them?
So there's no doubt that Southampton were the best team that didn't go up. Obviously, it all went crazy there with what happened, and they're going to start on -4. And we can debate whether that's fair or harsh or whatever, but they are starting on -4, and there can possibly be further sanctions against the manager. I wonder if this is just, you know, just enough now. There won't be any more. So in terms of winning the league, from starting from minus four and any possible hangover of what happened in the playoffs, I wouldn't want to back them to win the league. Mm. But they've kept together that whole squad that was the best team that didn't go up. So for them not to be in the, we haven't mentioned the playoff changes going to eight teams now, for them not to be in the top eight is unthinkable. From Middlesbrough's perspective, I almost wanted to be with them, but to lose, Hayden Hackney was the best player in the division. Mm. I don't think that's replaceable. And the striker that they've signed that was on loan at Oxford, Lancashire, seems like everyone's raving about this guy. I kind of need to see it a little bit more before I pencil him in for 20-odd goals. I'm not quite willing to do that yet. So I prefer Southampton of those, and I'd like to be on them in the promotion market rather than to win the league because of the points deduction.
Mark, anybody catch your eye?
Yeah, Middlesbrough to be promoted. So you are taking out if Wolves and West Ham kind of destroy the field. Southampton were my second pick there. So in terms of Middlesbrough, most touches inside the opponent's box last season, best possession. I do think there was just some bad finishing that just rectifies itself. Hackney is, as Nick says, I think irreplaceable really at that level. But the goalkeeper that's come in from Manchester United was Bristol City's player of the season last season. And the goalkeeper was the one that cost them in the championship final. And there were a couple of other, I wasn't sure on him at all. So I just think that they might be a better team all round, if you know what I mean, for losing Hackney. So I always liked the teams that just miss out on promotion. Mm. I think the manager was slightly too emotional maybe for that playoff final and kind of, I wouldn't read too much into that. I think Middlesbrough and Southampton are good sides that will, as Nick says, really struggle to be out of the top eight. And, in the playoffs, they're the two best teams for me.
And Milts, any lively dark horses that maybe we should look out for?
I think, the top of the market does look strong. And Middlesbrough and Southampton, the guys have made great cases for. I mean, Norwich would be interesting just because of the way they surged up the table after Philippe Clement arrived, from relegation zone, just missed out on the playoffs. But I suspect they've probably hit their peak there, and they may not go much further.
Friend of the show, Jack Reeve, who used to work at Racing Post, he says he follows like Norwich inside out. He says they've got quite a few injuries at the start of the season, so just watch out for that one, maybe.
OK, and before we conclude our Championship chat, just a quick word on the bottom end of the table and potential top goal scorer bets as well. Nick, who do you think will be battling it out to try and stay up?
I tipped Preston this day last year to get relegated, and I never had them as anything other than one of the worst three or four teams in the league, but they never quite got sucked into that battle. So it feels like Groundhog Day, but I do think Preston are up against it again. They've just lost their best player, Ben Whiteman, to Wrexham, which is a real blow for them. And, they're not going to spend big money to replace him because they can't really. So Preston will be down there. On a more positive angle down towards the bottom, I just want to give a positive mention to Portsmouth. It felt like every Friday I looked at their team news for the following day and they had 10 players injured. They had a real problem with injuries last year. The manager, Massino, is quite good. He goes into his third season. They've signed a couple of blokes for £4 or £5 million from abroad, which not many teams in that league can do. Now, whether they hit the ground running or not, we won't see. But if anyone's got the potential to be a quick improver, again, looking at things like season handicaps, I keep my eye on Pompey because that place can become, that's a ground that starts buzzing if they do any good, which they haven't been able to in this league for a long time. But wouldn't be shocked if they improved a bit.
James, anybody that stands out for you in terms of that relegation tussle?
I was looking at QPR, actually. Last season, only Sheffield Wednesday conceded more goals than them. They finished the season really poorly. And, it's kind of long-term trends. Since they got relegated back into the Championship, one top 10 finish in 11 seasons and, kind of swirling around the plug hole, possibly.
Preston, they had to cancel a glamour friendly against Barcelona because they didn't have enough players. It just the vibes don't feel right. They spent all the money on Alfie Devine, who'd done so well for them on loan, but I'm not sure if they had the money to, if you can only afford to buy like one player for £6 million, you're probably better off buying a squad. In terms of top scorer, Tolai, who just scores. I mean, everywhere he's been in English football, he's well. Apart from he started off at Brighton, which already I think is an interesting one. He, you know, Gyökeres was at Brighton, wasn't he? And you know, had to sort of this sort of long route to the top. Tolai scored goals for Port Vale. Scored a load of goals for Plymouth. Now he's signed for Bristol City. So I'm hoping he can do the same again. They have, since I sort of put him up, they have also now Bristol City signed Ballard, who they might share the goals around, but I'm not walking off him just because of that. So that would be my top scorer pick.
Anything else from the Championship, Nick?
Raul Jimenez will score 40, so that's top scoring done.
You like Millwall, don't you, to be sort of the repeat last season?
Yeah, so I think they're sort of 6-4, 13-8 or so for a top eight finish. Millwall, I can't have them out of it. They finished third last year. Like, they might have only been the fifth or sixth best team and overachieved a little bit, but they're stable. Again, they've only lost the players that they wanted to lose. Barry Bannon's gone back to Sheffield Wednesday, didn't really make an impact at Millwall anyway. They bring in, their recruitment's pretty solid. There's someone there who knows what they're doing, obviously, because they go abroad and bring in good players like that. Aziz is a cracking player. They are a top eight team, and they probably go under the radar a little bit because they're not fashionable and they're not a big club at that level. Quite unlucky, you know, they just froze on the night against Hull. Hull had the sign over everyone last year somehow, didn't they? And it affected Millwall as well. They'll be up there challenging top eight, I think.
Yeah, I've got Millwall down as being kind of this season's Millwall. You know, and like they had a pre-season friendly last week. 1-0 Cooper, and you're like, yeah, that, you know, that is just Millwall.
Well, we're going to move on to, we've said intriguing quite a lot this season in the preview, but obviously League One, probably more than most divisions, is going to be intriguing this year. When you've got the likes of Leicester City and Sheffield Wednesday in there, it looks like it's going to be maybe a bit of a bun fight on occasions. Mark, who are you thinking in terms of League One league winners?
I find this really difficult because Leicester are a freakish team, really. I mean, they've got players on like astronomical wages, even sort of for Championship in some respects, but definitely for League One. I've got absolutely no idea what their team's going to look like at the end of August. Even if people stay, like, do they want to play in League One? Russell Martin was a manager that I was sort of prepared to go to war for at one stage, but I'm sort of questioning my judgment there. Like, I think he did some cracking jobs early on. I felt he was harshly treated at Southampton, who didn't get that much better when he left in terms of the Premier League. And then he went to Rangers and he walked into, like, he just was not the right fit for Rangers. You know, Rangers fans wouldn't be, I would say, mad on his zen way of life. And, like, he just didn't get the club and they didn't get him. And, you know, that can happen at times. But I just wonder, he's quite a confident guy. Just wonder if he's had a knock to his confidence, and like if it starts badly, the Leicester fans will probably jump on his back as well. And so, Nick was talking about West Ham being a 100-point team. Like, Leicester have got the potential to do the Birmingham and kind of just be way better than everyone else. But I don't think I want to bet it at this stage. And then Sheffield Wednesday, like, the sort of Bannon signings an emotional one, and he comes back. Like, they've had so much to do. I'd just be looking to take on the front couple just because I don't think they're settled. Like, I've got big question marks over Jack Wilshere, but I am going to go for Luton. They finished last season strongly. They were favourites for this league this time last year. They're still carrying some players at the higher end wage bill-wise. And what I don't want to do is to be confident that Luton would do well, and the only doubt being over the manager, because if he's not good enough, I think they'll just get rid of him, and kind of that could be one of them where that they might do that quite quickly if it doesn't work out. So almost by default I went for Luton.
Okay, Miltz, anybody who's sort of struck a chord with you, maybe outside of those big two that we mentioned before?
No, I mean, I was thinking along the same lines as Mark, with Luton top two finish for me, kind of, you know, Leicester could run away with it, but Luton, as we mentioned, were expected to go really well last season. You know, didn't get going until too late. Won 8 of their last 10 games. Made some interesting signings. Bolton captain George Johnson, who got promoted last season. I think they could go well.
The signing, the striker from, the Northern Irish striker from West Ham. He had a few minutes in the Premier League, and Wilshere, I've forgotten his name now, but Wilshere was saying that he like really impacted the FA Youth Cup final when he was managing Arsenal's youth, and I sort of been tracking him for a while, so might if I ever remember his name, Marshall.
Callum Marshall.
That's it. So he might be one to watch out for.
James and I were just discussing how old we felt with Jack Wilshere currently being a manager, sat in League One of the potential promotion candidate. Obviously, you'll have had a good look at League One, Nick. What have you thought of the market so far?
Yeah, just Mark mentioned Russell Martin, and one of the traits of his starting new jobs is he can take a bit of time to get his style of play across to players. And if they don't hit the ground running, like we were talking about how West Ham, you know, Leicester fans do not expect to be in League One and want to win the league, and it may not start that way. The club's a real mess off the pitch. There was talk of some of the players have relegation release clauses in the Premiership from the Premier League. Some didn't. Not many. I don't think a double dip relegation clause is a thing. It doesn't exist. So
then you believe he might have put it in. So
they've got to get more players out the door. It's very hard. The club's a real mess. They could be a 100-point team, but I can't possibly be on board with that. From Sheffield Wednesday's perspective, I feel like it's going to take a little bit longer than one summer to turn everything around there. And there's been interviews with the chief exec, and he's talking like, yes, we want to go up this year, but this is a longer term, you know, trying to just keep people's feet on the ground. Signings like Louis Barry and Bannon back, the tide's turning, and they deserve it because what they went through was grim. But do I want to be on them to go back up at relatively short prices this year? No, for me. The team that are interesting for me are MK Dons, who've just come up. And teams going through leagues happens more often than people think it does. It really, like you get on a roll, and they're just that sort of team, and a bit of a cliche, but I think will be suited to playing at a high level. That League Two football where they just thump it forward, that doesn't really suit the way that the MK play. There'll be more people in that huge stadium now, which helps them. And the signings they've made, Dan Barlas is a good player at League One level. Who else was it? Wintle, that's come from Cardiff in this league, got promoted last year, probably one of the best midfielders in the league. So they've signed players for the top end of this league, and they were really good standard League Two-wise. They could be up there and challenge. I wouldn't be surprised if Doncaster went well. They've signed Alfie May, who was the apple of everyone's eye in this division a couple of years ago. He went to Huddersfield, and they sort of almost used him as a winger, which was all wrong. So I don't think he's finished. He could go back and score a lot of goals at that level again. They've not been talked about. They could be a top six candidate, maybe. But if I want to have an each-way bet, MK Dons is probably the one.
About the other end of the table, Mark, anything that sort of stands out that anybody would be against, maybe?
Nothing really in that relegation market. There's question marks at the moment over Burton, and sort of some sort of off-field issues there. But like off-field issues, as we're talking League One and you'll get to League Two, like there'll probably be something that pops up that we are completely unaware of and like impacts the team negatively. So I'm not sort of desperate to sort of be playing in the relegation markets. What I would say is that I in agreement with Nick, really, in terms of I think the League Two was decent enough last year. Like even Bromley, like they've got a way of playing that might not suit everyone, but they know what they're doing, a very settled team, and like they were 50-1 I think to win League Two, and they found a way to beat an MK team that was better than them on paper, and like I think Cambridge are good and were sort of of a reasonable standard last season, and then like Notts County will feel like sort of League One is kind of their level as well. So like those teams, all I would say is that I wouldn't, like if you're looking in that relegation market, like the four that came up might stay up, and that immediately puts your Burtons, I'll end up on football cliche there with, but yeah, your Burtons under pressure.
Anything else, Nick, that stands out for you for League One?
I thought Johnny Jackson did a great job to keep Wimbledon up with one of the smallest budgets in the league. It only comes harder to do it again, so they're going to be back in that battle. On the Notts County front, they lost Jatta, who scored all of the goals, whereas Cambridge have stayed more stable with, I think, their third or fourth favourites for relegation. And I've got a mid-table number on them, so I wouldn't be surprised if Cambridge were a bit better than people suggested. Burton, like Wimbledon, it's a low budget, and it's It's a thankless task for those managers doing that, because you overachieve 1 year and then it's expected of you the next year. Yeah. You can't keep overachieving year on year. So if there are four good teams coming in, the likes of Burton and Wimbledon have got real problems.
Milt's last word for you on League One. As we've already pointed out, really, you've got big clubs coming down. You've got teams that are solid coming up and spending a bit of money as well. It makes it difficult.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, following on from Bromley there, I thought they were interesting outsiders in the top London club market, up against Leyton Orient and Wimbledon, who, you know, both narrowly avoided the drop last season. Orient have sold top scorer Dom Ballard as
well.
Don't
tell EasyJet that Luton is not in London.
Well, I mean, Nigel Farage is keen for Bromley to leave London as well. So you read the small print.
It's not only Bromley he wants to leave London.
Bromley, yeah, won the title in League Two. The managers publicly saying they're aiming for the playoffs. So I like those bullish sound bites.
I know we need to move on to League Two, Warren, but I'd got a shout out for Wickham to maybe on the handicap. They were unlucky last season on sort of it's probably a bit better XG than where they ended up. I was speaking to a Wickham fan in the office just to make sort of get a sense check. Like, they were terrible first half of the season, but like Michael Duff, one of their managers that had a big reputation, sort of lost the reputation, and is now trying to build it back up again. And Woodrow was one eye down for the top scorer as well. So yeah, I'd be sort of pro Wickham.
Just before we move on, a negative mention for Barnsley, who are quite a big club at this level. Yeah. They've brought back Daniel Stendel, who managed them successfully, but about 10 years ago. He hasn't done much since. I think he was managing a reserve team last year or the year before. They've lost McGoldrick, who's gone to Mansfield, and a couple of other starters. And they're usually one of the yo-yo teams between the Championship and League One.
Yeah.
Just keep an eye on the trapdoor for them. They haven't been to League Two. I'm not sure if they've been there in my lifetime. Mm. But it's not impossible.
Nope. That is League One then covered. And we've got the bottom tier of the EFL now to look forward to in League Two. We've got the likes of York and Rochdale back in the league after winning promotion from the National League. Already been a bit of turmoil at York going into this season. Mark, how do you see League Two going?
This would be my sort of most comfortable. I'm comfortably confident that Salford are going to take a lot of beating. Mm. The money's come for them over the summer. Like, I just want people to stop backing them because the price is on the verge of being slightly off-putting. But I am... I mentioned it earlier on. I do like teams that are kind of good at the level and sort of shown it. You know, playoff teams that don't quite go up. I think that they're kind of where I start my research for the next season. Usually, like, Carl Robinson, he's got his critics, I think it's fair to say, and you know, there will be others that think it's like having a jockey that's sort of 2 stone overweight and he kind of holds people back. They've brought in Aussie that I don't know anything about other than he sounds like Postecoglou. He's Ange's mate and he's promising to kind of blow the league away with attacking football. In Langstaff and Molyneux, they've got kind of the creator and the goal scorer to play that football. They've always got a budget that is, you know, right at the top end of the market. They've signed other players that were League One last season or like Fleetwood captain. So you're buying sort of, you know, good players from League Two or kind of sort of League One end of the market. Like, something's going to have to go really wrong, I think, for Salford not to be right up there. And I wasn't that mad on anyone else, really. Salford.
Milts, for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think Salford set a really high standard and are going to score tons of goals. I was looking at Port Vale, actually, as one of the ones who've been relegated. You know, I think they knew their fate pretty early. It's not a traumatic final day relegation. So they'll have been planning. Obviously got to the FA Cup quarterfinals. John Brady arrived in January, and he actually faced a really similar situation at Northampton a few years back. Stuck with them after relegation from League One, and they reached the playoffs, and then the following season were promoted automatically. So you know, he knows what kind of task faces them. The squad seems pretty stable. Ben Garrity, the captain's signed on for another 2 years. So yeah, if you're looking for an alternative to Salford or maybe a kind of top three bet, I think Vale would be it.
Nick, you've already alluded to the fact that it can be a bit of a scrap in League Two. Who do you fancy to come out on top?
Yeah, we only need to look at the favourites or the favourites prices in each of the three leagues to see that this is, on paper, the most open of the three. And Mark mentioned Salford's price shortening, but I think that it has to when we compare West Ham 13-8 and Leicester 9-4 with Salford still available at about 5-1, and they are player for player head and shoulders above the rest of the league. So I wouldn't be put off by going in even at this price. I do think Salford are a good bet, but I do think there's competition, as you'd expect in a open race like this. I think Grimsby were a good side last year and won't regress, so they'll be there or thereabouts, as will Chesterfield. The teams that come out of the National League always have a good record, so York and Rochdale have to be respected, even though there's issues off the pitch with both of them. Both have lost their manager since they came up, but they both got 106, 107 points. It was even a better title race than the Wrexham Notts County won four or 5 years ago. Yeah. It was that good, and so those teams have to be respected. And also, you respect the teams that came out of the National League the year before, because Bromley won it in their second season. Barnet were a good side last year, but everyone spotted that, and all the best players are gone. They've been taken advantage of. Whereas Oldham, who quietly improved as the season went on, haven't really lost anyone and have got a little bit of money there to invest in. So I'd keep an eye on Oldham being a challenger as well. Yeah. But title bet is Salford.
Yeah, they were close to the playoffs, Oldham, but for some injuries, I think, towards the end of the season. I also think Bristol Rovers, having seen quite a bit of League Two football last season, finished really strongly after a terrible start to the season. So they might be one to watch in League Two. We're going to move from British shores to European activity now, because the Champions League, of course, will be a big focus later in the season. And Mark, it's been some fantastic football from Paris Saint-Germain over the last couple of seasons. The big question, I suppose, at the moment is, can they make it three in a row?
I mean, they definitely can. I think playing in France helps, because then they can rest players, they can move matches to Friday, they can take them out of the schedule. You know, they've done all of that last season. And I expect with, you know, having come from a World Cup, like Luis Enrique will probably do exactly the same again, because, you know, whereas potentially, you know, Arsenal and the other English teams have got battles on, like PSG are going off, you know, if they were trying, they'd probably be about 1-16 to win. You know, some of them French Ligue 1 games, like, they set a very good standard. But so they only did win it on penalties last season. And, you know, I don't know, my sort of instinct is to always try to get the favourites beat in the Champions League. But, you know, they are a very good side. The one I've landed on was Bayern Munich. They've got a similar kind of, I was going to say issue, but benefit in terms of they can rest players in the Bundesliga. I thought they pushed PSG really hard last season. It was a high-quality semi-final that was chaotic, the first leg. And, like, PSG just scored like some random goals in that game. I thought that Bayern were the better team for a lot of that game in Paris. You've got somebody like Elise that just wins games on his own. Harry Kane still scores plenty of goals. I think that it's an advantage to not play in a league that's so competitive.
Milt's Real Madrid have failed to win for at least two seasons in the Champions League, but they've brought in Jose Mourinho to try and alleviate the issues that they've had. Barcelona spending a little bit of money as well in terms of trying to strengthen their depth. Can we see maybe a Spanish bid this season?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think Barcelona would be the ones. I think there's so much going on behind the scenes at Real Madrid. And, you know, I'm not convinced that Jose is the man to be taking that job in the year of our Lord 2026. But I think it'll be really interesting. I mean, you know, that semi-final between Bayern and PSG did show the level that you need to be at. And Arsenal, unfortunately, after the great start to the final, then I don't think had another shot on target until the penalty shootout.
And even then, Gabriel
didn't have many in that. But so, you know, I mean, PSG looked terrific. I just looking at the prices, I thought maybe Manchester City could be one. So, I mean, you know, their Champions League record is really, really poor when you think of, you know, the dominance they've had in the Premier League. They've reached two finals in 15 attempts, won one of them. Mm. I think Pep, with the new league phase, just kind of started tinkering for the sake of tinkering a bit. And I think Maresca is going to have to take it seriously. You know, he wants to be winning games and get off to a strong start. So maybe that will take some of the jeopardy out of the knockout.
Maresca took PSG apart, didn't he, in the Club World Cup yep. final? And yep. I think PSG were trying in that game. But Nick, who do you like?
I want to be against PSG this time. I thought they weren't actually quite as good in the second year as they were in the first, and the level of competition just dropped perhaps a little bit the second year. And to do it a third time is a real ask. So I'm happy to be against them. Barcelona are favourites to win La Liga, but Real Madrid are shorter in the Champions League market. It doesn't make any sense to me. And it sounds like a late play from Barca to try and get Rodri, who it sounded like was going to Real Madrid. Mm. If he can sit in front of their back four and just help them defensively, the age profile of their squad is starting to hit lots of peaks, especially in the midfield areas and those wide forwards. Barcelona, if they can just concede a few fewer goals in those knockout games where Rodri you'd think could help, maybe should be favourites for the whole thing.
And I wouldn't disagree with that, to be honest with you, with the quality that they have that we saw, of course, in areas of the Spanish national team as well. If you look at the Premier League teams, obviously Arsenal got to the final last season. Marco, can we expect or do we feel like any of them can go that far again?
They've got good teams. Arsenal are a very strong team. I thought they had a very cosy draw through to the final last year. Now, they deserved that because they finished first, so that's the benefit of that was a nice, easy draw. I would say that they're the most likely to do sort of well this time around. Like Manchester United, you'd worry about that kind of defence. Manchester United, Liverpool, I would say even City. When you need to defend against PSG or Bayern or Barcelona, I'm not sure I trust any of them. Whereas with Arsenal, you can see them doing it. I mean, Aston Villa, when they... Unai Emery is very good, like picking a team for a game and a plan for a match. And they pushed PSG relatively close a couple of years ago. So I think they'll qualify comfortably, but it's a big leap to expect them to win it. So I'd probably be looking at outside these shores.
I mean, you mentioned Villa there, and James, there's a comparison for me sometimes with Unai Emery and Rafa Benitez in terms of tactically when it comes to sort of European fixtures like this. But obviously, having lost big players, that's going to be huge for Villa.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's almost a victim of his own success. You kind of, Villa won the Europa League under Emery. Well, of course they did, but, it's an impressive effort. And Mark said they were really good that last tilt at the Champions League. I just think, the competitive nature of that sort of, top half, mid-table of the Premier League means they are going to have to really, really focus on the Premier League. Otherwise, they might get swamped.
We didn't mention him. Like Manzambi would be an interesting player. He was one of them that really stood out in the World Cup. You're hoping he kind of, that is his level, or you don't want him to be the El Hadji Diouf or whatever, that sort of stars in the World Cup. But I think it'd be unrealistic to expect them to win it.
Yeah, definitely. Anything else that stands out in the markets you've looked at for the Champions League, Nick?
No, I think this new group stage was okay, but it's kind of killed the outright betting in the group stage, because who wants to have a bet on a team to win a 36-team league?
Yeah.
So, the group stage is just there for me now, this league part. I take the Champions League really seriously when it comes back in late January.
Mm. So you don't bet on the league phase?
I will probably end up having some bets where... But the good thing about it is we get more of those top teams playing top teams. So where I have a view on the top 16 teams in Europe and they meet, then I can have a bet there. But I'm not going to be all over a lot of the qualifiers from smaller leagues. I just don't have time doing four English leagues to do all of that as well. So I might have one bet per week in the Champions League, two maybe.
Quick run through then of Champions League winner picks, Mark.
Bayern Munich.
Hiltz.
Manchester City.
And Nick.
Barcelona.
OK, that is the Champions League then covered. And we're going to have a quick look now at the European top leagues, particularly, of course, the big four, so to speak, outside of the Premier League. And we'll start with France, where is it just a foregone conclusion?
Yeah, 1 point PSG win only. PSG, something has to go terribly wrong if they're not to win it. There's just so much change elsewhere that I find it difficult to get a grip on. Strasbourg, because they've got the Bluco link up, they might end up with another handful of players that we just don't know at the moment. But no, I won't be betting in the French league.
Anything in France for you, Wiltz?
I was looking at Lens to win the title without PSG again. I mean, they actually some semblance of a title race. they've finished 6 points behind PSG. Mm. Obviously, manager Pierre Sage has now joined Palace, but I thought, pretty solid squad and won the French Cup as well last season.
Well, nobody seemed to want to take the Italian national team manager's job. I just wonder whether there's going to be anybody who stands out from Serie A this season.
I was looking at Como because I think Cesc Fabregas, he's an interesting coach because they play really good football. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of analytical work going on with Como. I think they know what they're doing. They might be the Brighton or Brentford of kind of Italy, and it doesn't take that much to really rock it up because most of the teams in Italy are run really poorly. They've got Champions League though as well, which is going to impact them. I remember back in Napoli years ago, and they were 50-1 when they had Cavani, mm-hmm. Lavezzi, and Hamsik, and Como are sort of shorter prices than that. And they think, I think bookmakers are live to their chances, but they are a team. They are maybe in Champions League. They might be a team that that does better. Not saying they can win it, but that does better than expected. I think Inter set a really strong standard in domestically, and I would expect them to win it. When you got Lautaro Martinez and Thuram up front, that's just other teams in Italy just don't have that. It's a pretty pretty poor standard of league at the moment, unfortunately.
Yeah, Inter do look just so strong at the moment when you look at comparisons to the other teams, James.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think won the league by 11 points last season, and you don't really see any significant improvement.
But they're odds against. I mean, it's not we're talking, they're not a team that's fours on.
Well, we'll talk about Bayern, I'm assuming, now when we talk about the Bundesliga, because since Xabi Alonso's left by Leverkusen, there doesn't seem to be anybody in the pipeline to challenge Bayern in terms of the title. And, Harry Kane's on for possibly another goal-scoring record this season.
Yeah, the most interesting thing I think about the Bundesliga is actually not the Bundesliga and the Ballon d'Or betting, because Harry Kane is odds on to win the Ballon d'Or. Mm. He's never finished higher than 10th in the Ballon d'Or. He's just not got that glamour that's associated with kind of, and look, Rodri's won it, but Rodri had done more internationally at the time. You're looking at Kane, scored a lot of goals, but he only won the Bundesliga, didn't reach the Champions League final, didn't reach the World Cup final. I think in the Ballon d'Or betting, take on Harry Kane. I think Rodri is a very live runner, but I think you could back Rodri, you could back Mbappe, just if he's famous enough. Haaland is massive prices. There won't be an upset in the Bundesliga. There might in the Ballon d'Or betting.
Anything for you, James, in Germany?
No, I think it is not the most exciting of betting. Certainly the title betting, Bayern just should win by a street.
It does make you realise how spoilt we are in the Premier League sometimes when you see these title battles in Europe. And we're going to look at Spain, which probably should be a bit more of a title battle. We've had, of course, the big three battling it out over recent seasons. Have Barcelona got the edge this time, Mark?
I think so. I mean, Nick's put them up for the Champions League, says they might be the best team in Europe. If they're the best team in Europe, they should be winning La Liga. I think Atletico have gone backwards in sort of recent years, and they did well in the Champions League in as far as they got last season, but the standard wasn't great from them at all. They've got an amazing striker in Alvarez who just wasn't fit for the World Cup, unfortunately, for Argentina, and then when he was fit, Argentina decided not to play football for most of the latter stages. I cannot believe Jose Mourinho is the Real Madrid manager. It's bonkers. I don't think he can believe it. But you look at the it's still completely lopsided, and like Barcelona are more of a team.
And we've already mentioned Jose, and it does seem like a strange decision to go back down that route again. Maybe they just think that they need somebody to just pull it all together and try and, you know, work with the players that they've got, in the sense of maybe there's been a few high-profile disagreements behind the scenes, Miltz. I just don't see how he can kind of, you know, get them back to where they want to be.
Yeah, I mean, you might be right. It might just be a kind of knee-jerk reaction. Let's get some, you know, disciplinarian in to... Mm. But I don't think top football clubs work like that these days. You know, I don't think it's as simple as having a dressing room full of egos, so chuck the biggest ego of them all in there. And I mean, in their defence, they do seem to have had an ongoing defensive injury crisis for about the last 3 years, which obviously hasn't helped. But yeah, I just think the young players that Barcelona have are just a class above. Not convinced Jose is going to add another glittering line to his CV this season.
Well, I mean, when was the last time he added? When was the last time he did anything?
Mm. Yeah, it's.
But sometimes. I mean,
even Benfica, like, they were miles off.
No,
very strange appointment. We will see how it works out, and I'm sure there'll be some fireworks at one time or another at the Bernabeu this season. We'll go to the season Yankee in a moment or so's time. But just a quick word, Nick, for you on what Mark mentioned there about the Ballon d'Or. Is there anything that stands out in terms of the odds for you?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's not not a market that I'm generally all over. So Mark's made a good point to be against Kane there, and the reasoning that he's probably not in other countries. He's, you know, he's barely like the big figure in English football, never mind anywhere else. And we've all come home from the World Cup raving about Jude Bellingham. Kane scored a lot of goals in the early group games. He actually was a little bit disappointing in some of the knockout games. That can't have done him his chances that much good. Around Europe, I had to duck out there of the German and the Italian parts. I just, those leagues passed me by. I try to watch a little bit of La Liga and enjoy it. I have to be on Barcelona's side, and for everything we've discussed, I think from the coaching to the age profiles to everything suggests that if you can get around evens Barcelona, when it probably does go back towards a two-horse race again, because Atletico look probably a little bit outside of it this time, you're not going to get many even money bets as good, I don't think.
No, I wouldn't disagree with that. And as suggested, we've got a season Yankee for you. As ever, we have our four main picks of best bets for the season. Mark, probably best to start with you with this.
Yeah, so, well, I'll go through it for the team. We've discussed what we're going to do. We'll start with Barcelona to win La Liga. That seems to be probably the strongest selection in terms of, you know, what we all sort of think will happen in La Liga. So we're going for Barcelona to win the Spanish title. We've got Arsenal to win the Premier League, just the fact that so much change elsewhere. And then we've dropped down. We're going to avoid the Championship just because it's quite difficult to pick a winner. In League One, Luton for a top two finish. Nick, we've ignored what Nick thought on League One, but me and Milks are quite strong on the Hatters, so we're going to go for Luton. And then in League Two, you know, Nick was really confident on Salford, as was I. So it's Arsenal to win the Premier League, Luton for a top two finish in League One. That just rules out if Leicester do blow everybody away. In League Two, confident on Salford, and then Barcelona to win La Liga to bring it home.
Okay, that is the main four picks then of the upcoming 2026-27 season. A massive thanks to Nick, Mark and James for all their tips and input on this BKO preview. Please, of course, leave us your comments and picks for the new campaign as well. Like, share, subscribe on the Racing Post YouTube channel. Just a quick reminder as well that our weekly football show, The Assist, will return prior to the start of the new Premier League season. In the meantime, enjoy your football, and please, as ever, remember to gamble responsibly.